toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morado.
This is an official RTRFM produced podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat, as heard on Breakfast with Taylor every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1, or for this episode, Breakfast with Damo, who took over as a guest host. And in each episode, in each round of Movie Chat, we cover streaming releases, we cover cinema releases. And in this episode, we do that very thing. We look at a film that is out in cinemas now at the time of recording, a independent American film called On the Count of Three, which you lead the way on, Simon?
Yes, that's right. A film from Gerard Carmichael, who won an Emmy just this year for the very good comedy special Nathaniel. But this is definitely a film that takes a lot of inspiration from his comedic perspective, let's say, but is very different to the work he's put out previously. So we'll get to that in the second half of this episode. But first, the piece de resistance, Tristan, the review that everyone's been waiting for, surely, because there haven't been enough opinions about it yet. We do open the episode looking at Andrew Dominik's Blonde.
Yes, a Netflix original film produced by Brad Pitt and a dream project for the director to adapt Joyce Carol Oates' novel, a kind of fictionalized version of the life of Norma Jean, Marilyn Monroe, played here by Ana de Armas. And it's a film that's been very divisive, very controversial, and it's only been out for a week. So we take a look at Blonde.
Miss Monroe, it's time.
You get your start?
Maybe.
What start?
In movies.
Quite continental. But diamonds are a girl's best friend.
I guess I was discovered.
Men grow cold as girls.
I know you're supposed to get used to it.
And we all lose our charms in the end.
I just can't.
Square cut or pear shape.
I played Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe. I can't face doing another scene with Marilyn Monroe.
Yes, and with that, signals, Movie Squad, fellas, Simon, Tristan, g'day.
Good morning, Damo.
How are?
Oh, can I just say it is refreshing to have three white dudes talk about movies.
Oh, finally. Yeah. And wait till you hear what the first movie is that we'll be sharing our opinions
finally,
on.
Finally, we did it.
We did it, guys.
Okay, I cannot wait to do this segment. Listen to it. It's great to be doing it.
Fantastic.
Alrighty, Simon, Blonde. Now, first of all, it's not a biopic, is it?
Ooh, contentious. But I tell you what, I'm going to give Tristan the pleasure of unfurling this film for everyone.
Well, it is a biopic, but it's also been described as fiction because it's about Norma Jean / Marilyn Monroe. And it's a long gestating project from Australian, New Zealand-born director Andrew Dominik. He's wanted to make this film for the longest time, based on the novel by Joyce Carol Oates. And Naomi Watts was attached at a certain point. Jessica Chastain, and he's working with producer Brad Pitt, a person he's worked with before on previous films Killing Them Softly and The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, to make this three-hour movie on Netflix. It's a Netflix original about Marilyn Monroe. Is it a biopic? Well, it is in a way, but it's also fiction, as they've said in interviews, and there's been some unfortunate comments that Andrew Dominik has said in recent interviews that have made people... I mean, this is a controversial film, Simon. People have already kind of been discussing this film before it's been released, and they're discussing even further now that it is out.
Absolutely. I mean, but it is also by design a provocation. Like,
yes.
It is meant to kind of annoy you, or at the very least kind of challenge your not opinion on Marilyn Monroe, but your perspective on her. And I guess the larger debate around the film, which, you know, depends how much we'll get into it right now, is does the film dehumanize her or does it further reveal the trauma that she was going through while she was being commodified and put up there, Damon, as this sort of figure of idolization?
Yeah. Like, are you a Marilyn Monroe fan, Damon?
You're a Monroe head?
Well, that's it. I hold no strong opinions around Marilyn Monroe. So I'm going into this film with a very blank canvas.
Yeah, I mean, like, much like, you know, Elvis got a biopic this year, and those are two kind of American icons who their images and mythos is larger than who they are. And, like, you know, when you watch a Marilyn Monroe film, it's, to me, sometimes a bit surprising to go, oh, there's an actual person there. There's an actual actor who was, you know, a charming comedian and a good actor, more than just like a repeated image. But this film is really kind of looking at, I guess, their life. It starts off with them as a child with a kind of mentally unwell mother who's abusive, played by Julianne Nicholson, and then follows them as they, you know, grow in their career. They become a successful photo model, actor, star, sex pot. Their marriages to Joe DiMaggio, the baseball player, played by Bobby Cannavale, and Arthur Miller, the playwright, played here by Adrian Brody. Norma Jean, Marilyn Monroe, is played by Ana de Armas, best known for Knives Out and No Time to Die. And I think she's really good. She gives a lot of herself to this performance, to what is, as Simon was kind of mentioning, it's really a three-hour... This is a feel-bad movie. It takes you through the underbelly of Hollywood. It takes you through the kind of misogynistic machinations of the way in which this person, this star, was, I guess, used, abused, degraded, exploited, manipulated, all these things. And it's really up to the viewer whether they want to sign up for this onslaught of misery, which is what it is. It looks beautiful. It's shot by the cinematographer who did Lemonade by Beyonce, the Beyonce kind of music project. And this film has had some very divisive reactions. To me, I like Andrew Dominik's films. He made Chopper. Well, this is his big first film. The last film that he made, Killing Them Softly, is a very blunt, obvious movie in a lot of ways that I quite liked. But that one was under 90 minutes. And this one is 3 hours. And people critiqued that film because it had some obvious music drops. You see a scene of a character doing heroin, and you hear Heroin by Velvet Underground. This movie has this in spades as well. And I found it a bit exhausting, really. By the last half hour, I was a bit kind of bored because it is reductive. It just kind of hits the same thematic notes again and again. Her lost father figure, her want to have a child. I just found it a bit kind of draining. And I think that's part of it, but it also just felt like for a three-hour movie, there could be a few more notes in there. Simon, I mean, you saw this as well.
Yes, I similarly found the last 3 hours exhausting of Blonde. It's a really tough watch.
Yeah.
And I think there is absolute validity to a lot of the even pre-release criticisms of it, you know, the way it is commodifying someone who has been commodified throughout her life and kind of drove her to ultimately take her life. There is an element of it where Andrew Dominik has said in interviews he's mainly concerned with the imagery of Marilyn Monroe. And the film kind of oscillates between black and white and color based on the iconic image of that time, whether she's making a film or whether she was papped in the streets, whatever it might have been. And what is kind of painful about the movie, and I haven't read Joyce Carol Oates' novel, but it's 700 pages long. It's a fictionalization, but it does, at the very least, while it does kind of build her up as an emblem of 20th century America, it tries to get at the inner life or create an inner life. Andrew Dominik, he's using cinema to focus on the imagery. But that is basically saying, I'm looking at the artifice here and nothing below the surface. And I just don't think that's what cinema's really for. You know, I think, you know, well, I just think, like, I get it. Like, that's an interesting approach. But in the same way that, you know, books do a certain thing, and when Andy Warhol does his pop art Marilyn Monroe imagery, that's doing a certain thing. But this film, in just trying to recreate the imagery and maybe turn her into a Passion of Joan of Arc figure, or, you know, beatify Marilyn Monroe so that Ana de Armas is always kind of tear-strewn throughout the film, it feels just very hollow. And ultimately, whether it's, you know, cashing in on someone who was exploited all her life or not, it just makes for a very boring film that is kind of just embarrassing at times in how it strives.
I mean, I would agree to that. There are certain shots in this that, like, I was just like, what's going on here? It's laughable, and sometimes it is aiming for humor. It's trying to be camp, but it feels like a very acidic version of camp. Like, this film has the soul of an exploitation film, I would say, and people's enjoyment of it is whether they can get on board of that or not. If you're a Marilyn Manson fan, Marilyn Monroe fan, I don't know if you'll get much out of this film because it is an ugly film, but it's intentionally ugly. And I respect that, but I also didn't find it too enjoyable.
The use of the word exhausting sounds very apt.
Yes. Very apt. But yeah, now we're talking about another film that we've both seen called...
On the Count of Three. Yep, we're going to keep the bad times rolling, unfortunately. And I'm going to give a sort of blanket content warning for this review. It is a film that does deal with suicide themes pretty heavily, so just keep that in mind over the next 7 minutes or so.
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Suffocation, no breathing, don't give a...
What?
No.
It's a song about suicide.
You can't listen to music that exactly describes the emotional thing you're going through. You know how cheesy that is? I don't listen to Alanis Morissette when I'm going through a breakup, and I'm not listening to Papa Roach on the day I'm going to kill myself.
I get that you've been in like a little bit of a slump lately, but suicide's not the answer to that.
I know you think you can solve all your own problems, but that ain't working for you. Go talk to someone.
I'd like to make a return.
This has been a lifelong thing for me. You don't know that things won't get better.
You tried it, Kevin, and you ended up in a hospital. This time I'm here. We'll do it right. We'll do it together. I love you, man. You're my best friend.
I love you too, Val.
On three.
One, two, three.
Jesus Christ, man. I need one more day.
You just tried to kill yourself 3 days ago. You had three last days.
I got rice cooking in the microwave.
But this is the feature directorial debut of Jerrod Carmichael, who's a great comedian. I first came to know him when he co-starred as one of the frat boys in the Bad Neighbors films. But then he had a really excellent sitcom called The Carmichael Show. It only ran two or maybe three seasons, which really tried to take the form of traditional, mid-century American sitcoms where they would deal with issues of the day in the family living room. But it would deal very bluntly with some quite controversial topics, the Black Lives Matter movement, the cancellation of Bill Cosby, rightful cancellation of Bill Cosby, domestic violence. What was really interesting about the show, though, was that Jerrod Carmichael, who was this sort of mid-20s comedian, would be the instigator of these arguments, or would be the person with the least popular opinion, you know? And he was kind of playing devil's advocate in the show by playing the least likable character. And it's something that he's seems to be using as a not a crutch, but as a perspective and an angle as a filmmaker, because On the Count of Three is, like Blonde, a very provocative movie. It is a very dark movie. He plays a guy called Val. He's in his late 20s. He's, you know, very much depressed. He's avoiding calls from his girlfriend, Natasha, played by Tiffany Haddish. And he gets a promotion at what is otherwise a job he doesn't want. And he decides he's going to take his own life. But first, he's going to break his friend Kevin, played by Christopher Abbott, out of his psychiatric hospital, because Kevin's been depressed all his life. He's been in and out of these kinds of places. He breaks him out, takes him to the back of a strip club, hands him a gun, takes one out, and he says, on the count of three, we're going to shoot each other in the head. Now, I at least thought that, given Jerrod Carmichael's background, that this would be the starting point of a very dark but hopefully very funny film, because Kevin says, whoa, wait, I just need the day. Like, let's just enjoy our last day together. And maybe naively, Tristan, I thought, well, okay, maybe we'll get some Ferris Bueller-style shenanigans unfurling from here. But that is not the film Jerrod Carmichael wants to make, and maybe admirably, right? He is someone who is taking this head-on and saying, this is the gravity of what these two characters are dealing with. And even though the film does feature supporting performances from J.B. Smoove, from Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Henry Winkler and Tiffany Haddish, everyone is... not po-faced, but taking this very seriously, and it does get into even darker territory over the next 100 or so minutes. Tristan, before maybe I share how I actually feel about the film, I want to know what your expectations were and what you ultimately took away from On the Count of Three.
I was kind of looking forward to it because, you know, I like Gerard Carmichael. I haven't seen a lot of his stuff, but I do like Christopher Abbott a lot. I think he's a really underrated actor, and I don't think he'll ever be like a mainstream star because he wants to be kind of, I think, an intense method actor. And I think maybe when he gets to middle age, he'll be a magnificent character actor. But I really like him, and I was really intrigued by the film, and this idea of them holding guns on each other is a hook. But I think that the writers and the director and everyone involved got a bit carried away with that as the hook. Like, I wished, after seeing the film, that it was a bit more naturalistic, like it's aiming for reality, but I feel like it would have been better to just hang out with these guys as they kind of dealt with this rather than this kind of like screenwriting kind of manipulation of like they have one last day, they've got guns, they're running around. It's I found this film actually to be quite lacking and disappointing, because I think the performances are really good and there's a lot of good things in it, but I just found it a bit not one thing or the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. And that's where I fall on it. You know, ultimately, you kind of wish it was more like the Larry Clark or Harmony Korine version of this film that maybe is a bit visually heightened but is kind of down and dirty. It kind of still feels like a studio Hollywood comedy that is not funny. and Christopher Abbott is excellent here. He's really good. And Gerard Carmichael clearly has talent as a filmmaker and a storyteller. I think he is quite lacking as a leading actor here in trying to portray this very grave scenario. So big neon flashing warning signs on this one. It's a real bummer. And again, to its credit, it doesn't use suicide as a fun hook, but it means it is going right into the jaws of the shark effectively in dealing with this topic. And I think that's something people should know. And I would also say that it is worth contacting Lifeline if you have any of these concerns or thoughts. The number is 13 11 14.
Very well said, Simon. And I agree, even though I've only seen the trailer, and you can't judge a whole movie by the trailer, it seems to harp on that premise over and over again and bleed that dry and looks quite quippy.
Yeah, it's kind of like a bit cute, but never funny. A bit cute, but never funny. So, again...
Be like me.
Damo, come on now. Plenty to like in it, but maybe more as a respectable calling card for what these people could do in the future.
Fantastic. Fellas, thank you so much for joining me. Obviously, you've got a podcast.
Yes, and we'll be dropping that later today to hear the extended version of this chat, but thank you so much.
Legends, thank you so much. That was the Movie Squad with Simon and Tristan.
So there you have it. It was interesting to talk about On the Count of Three and Blonde in this episode, because these are films that we've both seen, and I had
and neither of us really like
similar reaction to both in different ways. I think I wanted something a bit more real, like the comment earlier. I wanted to add about, you know, Damon was saying that the dialogue is a bit quippy. I read somewhere someone else comparing that the dialogue felt like stand-up routines worked out between characters, and that's what it felt like to me. It didn't feel real in that sense, particularly for a film that's aiming to dig into these very serious issues. And then reality, that's a big question for the for Blonde, because that point that the director was making about wanting to recreate key images of Marilyn Monroe's life, it's sort of it feels like you never get a sense of the person, and it just feels like a kind of I don't know, it's a bit empty. But I mean, we were saying off air, like, it feels like everyone's got a take on this film, and it's hard to feel like you have I don't know, not the right one, but one that's clean.
No, exactly. Yeah. Like one that doesn't include all the baggage you're bringing to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the reality of, you know, you mentioned Elvis as well, and Marilyn Monroe, fairly or unfairly, and I would say unfairly, but it's the truth, is a commodified image of 20th century America.
Yeah.
Like, that is just what has become of her. And I like the idea of a film that interrogates the image of Marilyn Monroe and what that actually means. And I think that's, again, I haven't read the book, but Joyce Carol Oates' novel was trying to do that, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Andrew Dominik is just kind of looking at the images, recreating the images, adding some violent tinges to it, but is not really interrogating why she became this figure, or why we are all still projecting so much onto her. I don't think it even approaches that question. And we have to admit as well, as Damo joked at the start of the episode, we're three guys looking at this film, cis white guys who have a very specific perspective. And I think there are really valid perspectives from a lot of female critics, a lot of queer critics, Marilyn experts, however you want to put it. And there is a lot of stuff that we did not get into that the film explores that I think is, again, kind of gross, weird, disgusting.
Yeah.
Ana de Armas, I think, is a trooper. I think she is good in the role, but the game's kind of fixed against her.
Yeah. It's hard because, it's one of these... It's a film, and you read the interviews with the director and, you know, talking about its... depiction is not endorsement, that this is a film that is showing this kind of misogynistic system, a system that continues today in the ways in which starlets or women are used by the industry and mined and cast aside. But yeah, it's hard to, you know, prize apart, you know, with the director being a man. I mean, it you know, that some of the moments that are being shown can't help but feel like it's part of what it's depicting, and that's a criticism that it's been receiving, and that's one that I felt as a cis white male watching the film, that I was like, does that have to be shot in that way? Does that have, do we have to see that particular angle on this moment? So those were the questions I was asking, and then the key sin of any film is I just kind of found it boring after a while. It was just kind of hitting the same notes again and again, as many people have joked. If you try to do a drinking game with the amount of times that the character says "daddy," you'll be really on the floor. It's kind of to the point of parody, and it's hard to also prize that it's, you know, I think it's intentionally trying to be funny in certain moments, but it feels like a very heavy-handed attempt at humor.
I'm going to need you to specifically outline after this episode what those moments were, because I completely missed those intentions. One thing I do want to cite that we didn't talk about in the review is that tonally, and you would have, if you listen to the soundtrack with Nick Cave and Warren Ellis, I think it is absolutely striving visually, tonally, to capture that David Lynch vibe. And I thought it was so, not interesting, but I thought my observation was interesting, that this film is basically trying to be Mulholland Drive starring Marilyn Monroe. But Mulholland Drive is a take on the Marilyn Monroe sort of mythos. And I just kept thinking, well, then this version has already been done. And it's been done as one of the best films ever made with Naomi Watts. I also noted that this book has been adapted before.
Yes, as a miniseries,
with Poppy Montgomery, which I remembered from the early 2000s. I didn't watch it, but I remembered it being a thing. So it's kind of that the core question, like you say, you know, is it entertaining? Was I bored? Those kind of primal elements before you even get into.
Yes.
Like, it's like, why make it? Like, what is the reason for having this thing, spending 3 hours with it? I don't think the film ever makes that case.
It's interesting, the Lynch comparisons. I mean, it's also been, and I felt, that compared to Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, and the kind of very grueling path that film takes. And, you know, that received a very negative reaction on the back of the success of Twin Peaks. And who knows, in 10, 20 years' time, whether Blonde will be reappraised in the way that it has. But I felt like, you know, that film is harrowing and has great performances, but it doesn't, like, yeah, there's nothing... There's no other kind of performance that helps Ana de Armas out. Like, the other performers are fine, but they're sort of playing the same types of roles, I guess, if that makes sense. And, it gets interesting in that last part where it does turn into a bit of a Lynchian kind of horror show. But then I just felt like, well, I'd rather just be watching that and that could have been done earlier, or we could have, you know, lopped off an hour and had this be more palatable as an experience. And then, yeah, I don't think we'll see, you know, won't be the last film made about Marilyn Monroe. There are many other TV movies. I remember there was one where, I never saw it, but where Norma Jean and Marilyn Monroe were played by different actors. I think Ashley Judd and Mira Sorvino, I think was there's been a few, I guess, HBO-type cable movies made around the figure. And
Well, My Week with Marilyn came out like this decade or whenever it was with Michelle Williams.
And it's interesting to compare it to Baz Luhrmann's Elvis and them being kind of always kind of coupled together, these like American icons. Whereas it feels like we're, you know, right or wrong, you know, Baz Luhrmann likes Elvis or wants to, you know, is a fan and wants to kind of capture these moments. Whereas it feels, I don't know if the director of Blonde is really that much of a fan of Marilyn Monroe, and it's kind of just like wanting to use that to kind of talk about all these things, and it just gets really stuck in this childhood trauma thing. So look, it's a lot of a movie. It's a lot to kind of pass, and there's lots of opinions out there, but it's been good, Simon, to kind of
throw ours into the giant maw of content.
I don't know. I just was so shell shocked after watching it. I was just like, you know, I think maybe that's how everyone feels. They just got to get it out there and vent or somehow. Yeah,
it is a great way to detoxify your toxicity to watch and then expunge on Blonde. But lovely talking to you about it, Tristan.
And it was great talking to Damo as well. So, and thank you for listening. Please share, rate, review this podcast. We keep it happening week in, week out, thanks to the lovely people here at RTRFM. And it's always great to share these on-air chats in this format. So, yeah, anything you can do to help share that would be much appreciated. But thank you again, Simon.
Thank you.